Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show.
Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way.
And now, your host, Gary Noel.
To what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn how a new study from the University of East Anglia in the United Kingdom shows the benefits of blueberries for heart disease and diabetes prevention. Now, blueberries are well known as a superfood, and it looks like their health benefits know no bounds. So I'm going to tell you what blueberries will do in about 2 minutes. Then I'm going to give you about 10 more articles from the World Scientific Review. Every single morning, 4 o'clock, I'm reading all over the world the different scientific reports from quality peer-reviewed journals to share the latest insights with you. Also today, we're going to hear from an attorney who asked the FBI about Seth Rich. He worked at the DNC. He's the one, from my sources, to tell me that, including a former ambassador to Great Britain who is on the record with this, that it was Seth Rich who got so disturbed by what he saw was the Clinton machine switching over from the legitimate candidate in 2016, Bernie Sanders, to Hillary Clinton, that he downloaded thousands of documents on a thumb drive, took documents, met the lawyer in a parking lot across American University, handed to him. It was that ambassador who handed them to people inside Wikipedia. The Russians had nothing to do with it. That's a false herring. So then Seth Rich was killed, shot twice, supposedly in a robbery. The FBI said they didn't know anything about it, had no files on him. Turns out they lied. We're going to take a quick look at that. Then also, I found Malcolm Gladwell made very interesting comments. Whether he intended to or not, I don't know. But for me, they were very significant. It's in front of Google, in one of Google's top lectures. Why did I say yes to speak here today? And it's amusing, but it's insightful. I'll play part of it. And then you'll have a chance to call in and share your thoughts on our talkback segment. Now, this new study from the University of East Anglia in the United Kingdom has learned how blueberries can affect certain health markers associated with diabetes and heart disease. Now, this is on top of another study that I read from Laval University in Canada that had linked blueberries to improvements in physical activity and weight loss. Previous research has determined the positive effects of blueberries when it comes to diabetes and heart disease. However, not everyone receives the same health benefits when you eat them. The team here, led by Professor Cassidy, aimed to understand why this is the case. So he says the previous studies have indicated that people who regularly eat blueberries have a reduced risk of developing conditions like type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. This may be because blueberries are high in naturally occurring compounds. You've heard me mention this many times. Antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S. Now, those are flavonoids, and they're responsible for all fruits and vegetables' colors. And it's in the skin where you have these vibrant colors that a lot of the healing of the actual fruit or vegetable occurs. That's why juicing them, you're getting a lot of that. A separate study from Laval University looked at how blueberry consumption helped improve physical activity in this laboratory experiment, and they isolated compounds in blueberries that increase your physical activity. So these are called polyphenols, and they help prevent obesity. They help stabilize metabolic disorders like diabetes and blood sugar. So my takeaway suggestion is you can get frozen organic blueberries in a large package, like 5-pound packages. Have 1 pint per day, fresh, wild if you can get them, or frozen organic. It's going to help you. From King Saud University comes a study published in the British Medical Journal Pediatrics that vitamin E in your body and physical activity give you better academic performance, especially if you're a teenager. That's terrific. Now, you already know that vitamin E is a potent antioxidant that helps prevent cell damage. It helps carry oxygen throughout the body. It's a great free radical scavenger. But according to a study, adequate levels of vitamin E, coupled with regular exercise, also improve cognitive performance in young students. So then the question is, what vitamin E does for the brain? Kind of just extemporaneously, I remember I was asked by a dean or chairman of a department at Pratt Institute, would I come over and join them and teach a course on health? I'd been on the teaching down at the New School for Social Research for a long time and City University Graduate School, College New Rochelle, Fairleigh Dickens University, where I was for a long time, because the dean was a friend of mine, and I did it as a favor. He'd come pick me up and drive me out there. I'd do my class, always packed, and then come back. And we'd have wonderful conversations. Ron Colucci was his name. And a good example of a highly educated, really smart guy, and nice, great sense of humor, and never took himself too seriously. And he would sit in on every class for years, never missed one. And I said, why? He said, well, because I'm learning, and I love to learn. And driving back once, he was having some problems breathing, and I said, Ron, you need to lose some weight, buddy. I know. I set up a gym in my garage upstairs, but I don't use it. I'm so busy working. I said, well, wouldn't it make sense you take care of yourself? And I was saying this to Dr. Rivisi, to Linus Pauling, all these people I knew. If you take care of yourself, then you're going to be around a lot longer, and you're going to be able to share more of your unique insights. And they nod their head, but then they don't do anything. So in any case, I invited him to come down. He had been down to my home in Florida to the animal sanctuary many times. And I said, come down, take a sabbatical. Well, I will. I'm going to retire in 9 months. Then I will. I said, you need it now. Excuse me. He didn't take my advice. And unfortunately, in the parking lot, he died of a heart attack. That has happened so many times with so many people I know. But that's an aside. In any case, jump over to Pratt. So we have a meeting, and I'm meeting some of the faculty and some of the executives. And they're polite, and they're asking me appropriate questions. But one guy had a whole list, a folder full of questions, very arcane, specific, on biochemistry, inorganic chemistry, cellular chemistry, nutritional physiology, all of these really tough questions. So after about 20 of them, and he's asked me about the Krebs cycle, and I described that. What he didn't know was Dr. Krebs I knew, and his son was a friend. In any case, it came to vitamin E. And so the first thing I said, well, which of the fractions, the four fractions, are you discussing? And he suddenly had this deer in the headlight. Oh, you mean the guy quizzing me and grilling me, trying to make me look as if somehow I'm incompetent to teach this course, doesn't know the answer to the question. Yep. Rule one in a court of law or any place else where you're grilling someone, better not know the answer before you ask someone a question if you're trying to trap them. So the idea is that research on vitamin E, there are over 50,000 studies. And so I went into great depth about what's in the vitamin E. Is one of the strongest antioxidants you can take into the body, and it traps free radicals, neutralizes them. These are unpaired electrons in their outer orbit, so when you have vitamin C or you have coenzyme Q10 or you have vitamin E and about 36 other different antioxidants, they will attach themselves to a free radical and it neutralizes. The difference is a lot of these antioxidants only make one or two loops through the bloodstream, and then they're done. Where vitamin E can go on, is like an ever-ready battery. It just keeps going on and on and on. Vitamin C does the same, and they work synergistically together. So if you're taking vitamin E before you work out, and I explained this to him, I said, what is the difference in the amount of stress that occurs, oxidative stress, to a runner who has a lot of antioxidants in their blood when they go out for a workout versus the one that doesn't? He couldn't answer it. And then I went through the whole biochemistry of oxidative stress, that one loop around Central Park, which is 6.2 miles, is equivalent in free radical and other types of inflammatory responders. It'll impact C-reactive protein, it impacts the prostaglandins, impacts cytokines, meaning inflammation, as if you were smoking cigarettes. So I said, but if you take the antioxidants in your blood, as you're creating free radicals from the oxidation, meaning breathing hard in and breathing harder out, that exchange between oxygen to carbon dioxide creates free radicals. And then the body doesn't know that you're running for the joy of it, to be in shape. The body thinks you're fleeing. Therefore, your cortisol levels increase, and then your whole cascade of epinephrine, norepinephrine, catecholamines, cortisol and adrenaline all go up, and your blood sugar and goes right up with it. And so does your glucose levels. They're all affected, but not in a good way. Now, yes, you're getting into shape, and yes, you're burning fat. That's good. You're laying down more muscles. You're creating endurance, strength, stamina, all good. And you're lengthening your telomeres, the end cap chromosomes on cells that define how long that cell line is going to live. The more exercise you do, the longer the telomeres, the longer you live versus sedentary. But by having these free radicals in your blood, when you're exercising, you're also trapping the free radicals the antioxidants in your blood. When you're exercising, you're trapping the free radicals that are being created. Therefore, you don't suffer double negative. In fact, you have compensated, and hence I created the term excessive compensation, meaning to the degree that you have any imbalance, biochemical, hormonal, injury, virus, bacteria, parasite, psychological, or epigenetic, you must compensate on the other side of that equation in order to exceed the limitation of the negative, the disease process, by healing process, and then that suddenly collapses in a quantum way, the disease process, and hence quantum healing, something that American medicine is absolutely clueless about. It was funny. I had seven physicians at a recent retreat. Two of the physicians were board-certified oncologists and both professors, one at Sloan Kettering, one at University of Pennsylvania. And they came because they had heard what was going on, and that one from Sloan Kettering, nice person, brought their husband, who is one of the top pain doctors in New York City. They couldn't fully understand what they saw, but they saw it. The same with the oncologist from Pennsylvania, who actually sent a patient without telling us. This person was deemed terminal, couldn't survive. And in fact, when I saw it, I said to Luann, how did this person get here? We're not allowing terminally ill people to come. We're not a hospital. This is about wellness, not disease. But we didn't have the heart to send her home, and I was just concerned she'd die. She was literally on her deathbed. But over the next 2 weeks, completely turned this person around. She was up walking, laughing, talking. In fact, when she went home, I gave her a protocol when she went home, and it was interesting because this is something I want you to call me and tell me what you think happens. She has seen remarkable improvement. I can hear her on the phone talking because she's sitting outside the table in my little office. I have the old, the caretaker's single room upstairs is where I broadcast from. And she's talking about her energy, her appetite. She's gained 7 pounds. She's walking, and he's very excited and very happy for her. And now her oncologist friend who brought her there says to me, I don't know what I'm seeing. There's nothing I can do to explain this from my Orthodox medical background, but I'm seeing it. I'm here. I'm seeing it. If my husband, Jan, told me this, I wouldn't be able to believe it. I have to see it. But, she says, based upon my own spiritual background, meaning her spiritual background, and she's a deeply spiritual person, very loving human being, very, very nice, very ethical. She says, I also know that there are things beyond ordinary science that we do not understand. So I know what I'm saying, and it's real. I just don't understand it. In any case, when the woman was ready to leave, I sat with her and I gave her a whole protocol. I said, now here's a person in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, that you can work with. He's a holistic oncologist. And here's the protocol. Here's the recipe. I even printed out the recipes for you. And she looked at me, and I put them in her hand. She looked at me, and she's kind of, it wasn't a smile of happiness. It was a smile of irony. And she handed them back. She says, I wanted to see if I could have some more time with my husband. And you've given me that. But I know I'm not going to do any of this stuff. And I said, hold on a second. You'd be dead right now. You're alive. You're in the process of living. Why not try this? What do you have to lose? And she didn't answer me. Well, about 3 months later, about that, I get a call from her husband that she had just passed. But he said for the first time in years, she was downstairs in the morning before him, made breakfast, and he said when he came down the steps and smelt the food, and there it was all at the table, and she's smiling. Wow, he said, you gave me back my wife. And he said, I will never forget the last 3 months. She was vital. She was cognizant. She was aware. We were happy. And that's immeasurable. Now, I didn't want to say, well, why didn't you ask her to continue? Why do you think she didn't continue? Legitimate question. I have my own thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. And by the way, that's not the first time that's happened. That's happened thousands of times where you help a person through a crisis, you get them up on their feet, and that's what those of us who are caregivers are meant to do on a spiritual level, and then they don't follow. They go right back. Why? 888-874-4888 is our talkback number, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. In any case, I finished up by talking about what happens when we have a moderate amount of vitamin E, a normal amount of vitamin E, and a large amount of vitamin E. And I said, sir, are you aware of the 33,000 monographs published by Wilford and Evan Shute, both cardiologist doctors in Canada, with photographs of how they reverse gangrene, how they reverse intermittent claudication, how they reverse congestive heart failure using high doses of vitamin E. We're talking about real high. I won't even tell you because I don't want anyone to self-medicate, but we're talking about mega high, beyond anything any doctor in America had ever used. Now, I know this for a fact because, A, I interviewed them, and, B, I invited them to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel to the Grand Ballroom, where I spent a whole day with all the top nutrition inventors, meaning Linus Pauling, Albertson Georgie was there, who got the Nobel Prize for discovering ascorbic acid, Dr. Williams, who invented more vitamins, discovered more vitamins than any other person in American history, all the top people. There were like 9 of them, and they showed all these slides, and they have these big books. I said, are you aware what it does at a therapeutic level? He said, no. So you still believe that people need 30 units of vitamin E a day? Yep. What if I told you they're able to reverse disease at 3,000 units? He said, that's insane. I said, it's insane because you haven't seen their work. But what if I were to give you all those monographs because they gave me a copy? I will give it to you. Will you read it? He said, nope. So the man who wanted to see what I didn't know was a person filled with deficiency and not just a vitamin E. And by the way, for those of you suffering from bronchopulmonary dysplasia and the development of the central nervous system in children, lots of studies on what vitamin E does as an anti-inflammatory. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal of Neurobiology of Aging. And you increase students' endurance, aerobic capacity. You can measure maximum oxygen uptake, especially when you're doing treadmill work. So vitamin E is really hip, very important. And finally, from Tulane University, published in the peer-reviewed journal Diabetes Care, supplementing with glucosamine, glucose, G-L-U-C-O-S, amine, that means amino acid, A-M-I-N-E, is linked with reduced risk of type 2 diabetes. That is good, especially when we have so many men and women in the United States who have type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetic. Oh, and by the way, Loyola University just published a study on transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS, showing promise in treating stroke, dementia, and migraines. People years ago thought, well, that's all quackery. No, it's not quackery. The leading neurologist and professor at Loyola University's Chicago Stritch School of Medicine highlights the compelling scientific and clinical data supporting the studies of TMS, transcranial magnetic stimulation. It's just made up of one or two copper coils positioned at the external targeted area of a patient's scalp, which produces brief magnetic pulses to an estimated depth of about 2 to 2.5 centimeters, and the magnetic field triggers changes in the neuronal activity and communications, which can alter unwanted activity within the brain. So it's terrific. So something more we can add. And this was published in the current Neurology and Neuroscience Journal. That's half of what I got to say today, but we're 22 minutes into our program. Going to take a break and come back. And by that time, I hope that you have called in and given us your idea of why, when life was opening another door, a person said no. Thank you for the getting me healthy and up on my feet and able to not die on. And by the way, she was off all medication, all opiates for her pain. She had no pain, none. Came in excruciating pain. She couldn't get up off the couch for 8 hours. She was walking around, smelling flowers in the butterfly hat. Why? 888-874-4888. That's what we're going to come back to. And then we'll go on to other issues. We're here to empower people on all levels. Hope you're here to share with us. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall. Now we're going to go to our talkback segment, and let's say hello to, we have some people up. I want to hear what they have to say. Let's start with Carol from White Plains. Hi, Carol. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. My theory is her husband was not following the same foods that she was on. Was he?
I never asked him what foods he was on. They had the standard American diet. That I do know.
Well, she needed... She didn't get the support she needed, and then she saw everybody else eating and whatever everybody else was doing, and she needed the strength or she needed the support to keep going. And she saw how hard it was. Well, at the villa, it isn't hard. But when you get back to the real life, it's not easy. I mean, it's not so easy to do. You have to want it so bad. And it works. I mean, I'm a testimony of that. I'm not on any medications. I came to your villa 3 times. It works. It works. But people have to have support. That's my theory. What's yours?
I'm going to hold my thoughts, but Carol, I appreciate you sharing it. What you're saying, if I understand what you're saying that in life we need the principle of a support system, another person, someone or other people, someone who understands what it is that's prevented us from doing something on our own. And that prevention, let's say, on behalf of other people, infusing it within us, allows us to say, well, thank you for having confidence in me. It's given confidence to myself. So, yeah, I'm not afraid of giving up some of my old habits if you're there to be a part of my change. Is that what you're saying?
That sounds pretty good, but it isn't so easy because I'm alone, and I see, but I don't care because I know how I feel. When you feel good, you want to give up that cake. You want to give up anything that's going to interrupt the balance of your body because it feels so wonderful. I'm 75. I have so much energy. And I even stopped eating between 4 and 5, you had suggested, and it gives my body a chance to rest. It's amazing. People think when you get older, it's over. It isn't over at all. And Gary, thank you so much.
Carol, you're welcome. At some point, all of us, in our own way, since we all take a singular journey through life, joined for different periods of time, sometimes shorter, sometimes longer, sometimes joyfully, sometimes in conflict, we all need to let the rebel in us come out. And being a rebel also means you're not afraid of reforming the system or the paradigm that you're a part of. Wasn't it George Bernard Shaw who said reformers have the idea that change can be achieved by brute sanity? So let us not, and I just finished writing an article this morning, you're going to hear tomorrow here on the air, about what happens when we have more respect for the conformist who is the authority on conforming and rewards people for conforming, like in medicine. It doesn't matter that every patient dies as long as you've conformed to not alter the protocol, if the protocol is rewarding you, not the patient outcome. So it's just another way of looking at it, but I appreciate it. Jim from Connecticut, your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Great. Thank you.
I agree with Carol. I agree with you. And it reminded me of an experience I had a few years ago in New Haven, Connecticut, when I knew a doctor who's an attorney, MPH, MBA from Yale, Harvard, UConn, and Dartmouth. I presented him with information that we talk about all the time a few years back, and his belief system was so bad, he wouldn't open up the parachute of his mind to accept it. So I go back to what we talk about in terms of the censorship that we have out there around the world by the deep state and corporate America, and their belief system is so strong, they can't accept change, and change is very difficult, as you know, with most people. You know, when you're presented with information that contradicts people's belief, it's very hard for people to change. But when they change their minds, that's amazing. That's amazing. That's what I would say.
Okay, well, let's just pick up on one point of that. You're familiar with T.S. Eliot, correct?
With what?
T.S. Eliot?
Yes, correct.
Great thinker of the 20th century, early 20th century. He said, what is actual only for one time and only for one place. That means that to the conformist, everything that represents change is a threat. For those who have conformed to comfort, even when the comfort is killing them, the comfort of a sugary drink, the comfort of a cigarette, the comfort of mindlessly participating in a voyeuristic process of watching television, that is all to their undoing. And it was Gertrude Stein who said, when you get there, there isn't any there there. So think about how many times people have thought that if only I work harder, if only I achieve something, if only I'm in the right relationship, if only I had more money, if only I could overcome my insecurity, then I would be free. And every time they get to where they thought that they could make compromises to get that place, there was no there there. There was no fulfillment. There was just this deep, transient, unrequited sense of what I call the big empty. I appreciate your comments, Jim. Thank you. Ed from Los Angeles, your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I can kind of relate to your experience. I was a caregiver for 9 years. When my wife, in 2017, she had developed acute myeloid leukemia, and we went vegan that day, both of us. I'm still vegan. And we developed a protocol based on 16 years of listening to your program, and we got a lot of success going. She was having a transfusion every 7 to 10 days, and then when we went vegan, after 9 months, there were like no transfusions. We were on your show a year ago, March 12th, talking about it. But after that, she went downhill. She was just giving up. She didn't want to follow the protocol. She didn't go to the right dentist. She didn't go to a holistic dentist. She went to a Western medicine dentist. She was pouring the Asaic tea out into her commode. And she couldn't answer one basic question that I asked her when she first got this diagnosis. What do you have to live for, and why do you want to live? And she said, oh, come on, that's a ridiculous question. And I said, no, it's a really important question. Well, she had finally admitted to me that she had nothing to live for and that she did not want to live, and she finally gave up and passed away at the end of July. And I believe that it's possible that this woman that you knew, and I don't know her personally, that she had nothing to live for. That's my thoughts on it. Thank you.
You could be completely right on that. Phil, I'm sorry for your loss, but we cannot live a life for another person. We cannot infuse or imbue our meaning, our purpose, and stamp it as if it's a modern-day, new-age facsimile of real life onto another person. That moniker has to be something they create, meaning until you invest in your own life and you're the architect of it, you don't own it. If all you're doing is hanging on or in some way embedded yourself into someone else, and this is what frequently happens when people are famous, other people latch on to them because more often than not, they're a meal ticket. The gold digging is pandemic in our society. How do you use people, manipulate it? It's pandemic. And that's why so many people end up spending an inordinate amount of time looking for themselves and someone else's success because they don't see that inherent within themselves. They don't see success. They don't see happiness. They find happiness when other people bring it to them, serve it to them as if it were a gourmet 12-course meal. And that could last for a period of time. But in the end, when they go into the kitchen to prepare that meal for themselves, all they see is just barren cupboards. And they say, I don't want to do this anymore. Why not? And then the question is, did they ever want to do it except through someone else being responsible for the choices they make? And then based upon their conditioning and the familial conditioning and the cultural conditioning and the civic conditioning, how long they stay in a bad place without becoming responsible to say, this is a damn bad place. Think of all the people in Louisiana who had floods in northern Louisiana where they did not have flood insurance. Thousands and tens of thousands of people in one parish, a parish is a county, had no flood insurance and their homes were destroyed. Not a word beyond that in the media. What are all these people going to do? Where are they going to go? How are they going to live? Because they did not think it would happen until it did. So those are people who never look ahead. If you say, look up. Nope. Why not? I don't want to see what's coming. But at least if you see what's coming, you can get out of the way. You can make changes. Nope. I'm going to stay steadfast to what I was conditioned to believe is the only reality. Well, who told you it was the only reality? Some artificial super figure in your life? And so that's what happens frequently when one person in a relationship says, hey, come on, we have nothing to lose by growing. And the other person said, I'm terrified of growing because all of my stories about me and my woe and meaning come from my past. So you're going to live in the past? For how long? Because the past is where you die. You can't be reborn from your past. And yet we think that somehow there's a requiem here. There isn't. Thank you, Phil, for your comments. I'll take one more. I don't know the pronunciation of your name. I'm not sure I have it here. Is it S-A-J from Canada?
That's correct. Saj.
Saj. Okay. Hi, Saj. Welcome to the program. Please share your thoughts with us.
Well, first of all, how are you today, Gary?
If I was any better, I'd burst.
Good answer. Good answer. So I've been listening to you for quite a while now, and I've been on this journey for about 15 years, really, really tremendously concerned with the human condition and all of our human problems. And I've been observing myself and all of humanity in every way that we can possibly observe each other. And I've realized something, and this is not a conclusion, because this is something that keeps getting proven moment to moment, every single day. And I've realized something is that, generally speaking, I'm not saying every single human being falls into this category, but I can probably safely say almost all human beings, we don't care. We don't care about anything, Gary. Actually, care. Like, I'm not talking about self-interest so you do the right thing because you're interested in it. I'm talking about actually deeply in your blood, in your guts, in your heart, in your bones, in the depth of your being, care. Care about every breath, every step, every thought, every word, everything we eat, how we eat, how we treat people, how we live, to truly, tremendously put the utmost care into every action. Now, that is a very rare human being. You display that almost regularly, you know what I mean? So, but this is a very rare thing amongst humanity. And I realized that I needed to understand why. What is it that's stopping humanity from caring? And it's very simple, Gary. We don't want to, you see? If we wanted to care, we would care. You see, we want a million different things, but it seems almost all of humanity doesn't want to care. They want to do everything else, which brings them the ultimate pleasure, right? So our two main focuses, our two main goals in life for most of humanity is surviving and pleasure. And caring cannot fit into that. Caring has no place in those two movements, right? So we're all basically, well, not all, but almost all of us, are basically only interested in ourselves and what we want, and we want only two things, survival and pleasure. Because it seems that wanting to care is something that is so absent from our lives from the moment we're born. Like, I mean, in the way we're educated, in all of the things that we witness and observe throughout our lives, that we see our parents do, our siblings, our teachers, society as a whole, the TV. There's no care in any of that. Actually care, right? Most people, like I said, we're just motivated by self-interest. And our self-interest could be very positive. They could be, you know, they can very easily display care, but then when you're indifferent to every other movement in life and you're indifferent to all the other societal issues, then that's not care. Because care is like love. It's all-inclusive. Care is love. It's not like love. It is love. When there's love, there's care, right? But that's always an inclusive movement. It is not something that you exclude, you know, certain things because you're not interested in them and you only give your self-interest to this and then display it like you care, you know? And it begins, truly, I realize, when people stop caring or if they've never cared, it begins with themselves. Just look how we treat ourselves. Look how we treat our bodies. Look how we treat our children and each other and the earth. Care is almost absent on earth amongst humanity. You know, if you want to see a very easy to observe display of care on earth, just observe nature. the entire movement of nature is rooted in love and care. It's totally unconditional. It is a movement of sharing. It has no expectations, you know. So this is something that I've really given a lot of energy to, and in fact, all my energy, my whole life. I've given my whole life to this human problem. You know, I'm not interested in anything else, Gary. I don't think about anything else. I don't talk about anything else, because this is the only important thing for any of us to do, is to really go into why we human beings are the way we are, and why don't we change, and why don't we care? Because you can't change if you don't care. It's impossible.
Let's pick up on one thing you just said, that change is what is important. Are you familiar with the great philosopher Eric Hoffer?
No.
Okay. He said every new adjustment is a crisis in self-esteem. I think it's very important that we understand that any time that we are about to do something different than what we have been taught to do, conditioned to do, or believe that we were doing correctly, it creates a crisis. Now we're not confident. We know that what we've done doesn't work for us, maybe a relationship, maybe a job, wrong place, wrong time. And we have been too passive. We have not stepped forward when there was a need to, even in self-preservation, even in people who right now are living in Australia and shouldn't. There is a wonderful couple that live in Australia, and I've communicated with them. She actually came to a retreat, and she helps, in her foundation, helps people, migrants, when they're going from, let's say, Syria, and they end up in Greece on an island, and they're put into these, what amounts to internment camps, terrible conditions. And she reached out to me to say, would I come over and help him? And I said, yes. And in the process, I suggested to her that Australia was not going to be viable. And she said, why? Are you kidding? Sydney is one of the most cherished go-to locations for buying real estate and doing business in the world. I said, yes. And have you looked at underneath that infrastructure? There is no sustainable water. Well, guess what? Now Sydney, one of the most expensive places in the world to live, more expensive than Vancouver, it's right up there with Singapore and with Hong Kong, it's run out of water. Not temporarily out of water, permanently out of water. It's going out of water. Brisbane and others are in the same pickle. Now, Australia is about the same size continentally as the United States in landmass. And yet, 90% of it's desert or inhospitable territory, unless you're an Aboriginal person, in which case your historical ability to survive and thrive in that environment has been tested and proven, much like the Bushmen of the Kalahari. You and I might not last 2 days there, but they've had millennia to adjust and to adapt in the proper way. So when I went through all the things that you should know about Australia that she was not aware of, and she's a native, born and raised there, she was surprised. Now, this was 3 years ago we had this conversation. Now, look what happened. Hottest season in their history, hottest out-of-season hot weather, meaning it wasn't even their summer yet, and everything was parched. Then the big fires. The biggest fires in the world were in Australia. Blew out everything. Over 1 billion animals died. They were completely unprepared. Didn't matter whether it was a liberal or conservative government, they didn't prepare for anything. People didn't prepare. People didn't think, what if, what if? All the thousands of dairy and cows killed, the sheep, and now those that survived don't have any place to eat grass, they don't have any leaves and trees, and yet they still are not going to prepare. Now they got rain bombs, and that created the ash in the water, which clogged up the streams and rivers. It's done. It's over and done and gone forever, Australia. But I could mention at least 22 other countries that are also at the end. Qatar, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Syria. Places where one time you could live, and then with oil money, you could create artificial environments like Los Angeles and San Diego, for example. But then in time, that karmic law catches up. You mentioned how important it was for nature, to understand nature. And these people only thought about manifest destiny conquering nature and everything that was a part of it, including the indigenous people and enslaving them and reinculturating them in not allowing them to go to their own schools, learn their own language. So all we have in the United States and in Great Britain, I'll talk about my own ancestry, the McClellan clan from Ireland, where my mother originates, and the Irish famine, and show you how bad people can be. You mentioned that, selfish, how selfish and self-absorbed they were, that they allowed over a million, some say as high as 2 million, people in Ireland to starve to death when they didn't have to. They didn't have to. They had plenty of food, but all that food was being exported to Great Britain. Mind you, at that time, Ireland was a part of Great Britain. Therefore, the mindset of the royals, the aristocracy, and the mercantile class, three classes of people, was we come first. And it wasn't about needing food. It was about controlling the controlling the commerce in a never-ending way that is always growing. So making money became more important than British citizens' lives. That should tell you a lot about selfishness. But that's only one example. I have examples. Who was it? Wasn't it A.K. Chesterton who said societies are far gone in depravity when toleration is considered a good in itself without regard to the thing tolerated? We tolerate politicians. We tolerate the police. We tolerate the militarization. We tolerate being citizen activists, and now we're domestic terrorists. We tolerate 17 intelligence agencies that serve no useful purpose in actually protecting us, but everything is about keeping it going, the power which does not share itself, as you had mentioned. So why do we tolerate a biased media? Why do we tolerate Wikipedia? Why do we tolerate people who have this demand that we defer authority and its power to them when they have no intention to use it in any constructive way? Why? So these are the things that you're thinking about, and good for you, that others are not thinking about, and that's unfortunate. Because when I think about how the journalists in Great Britain say that Winston Churchill was the greatest English. No, he was a rabid, rabid racist, misogynist, genocidalist. He alone caused the death of millions of people in Bengal and in India. There was a man named Sir Randolph Routh, R-O-U-T-H. He called out taking food from the Irish countryside and selling it over into Great Britain, thousands and thousands of ships loads full, a serious evil. And yet there was a man called Trevelyan, T-R-E-V-E-L-Y-N, and he was, Charles Trevelyan, he was the one who was responsible for the famine. And he was one of the favorites of Queen Victoria and the aristocracy. And so the Irish children knew about the famine, and it was caused by the aristocracy, but the British children and the rest of the world thought it was just blighted potatoes. It wasn't. So you see, that selfishness personified by a nation and by individuals within the nation. So thank you for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us. We appreciate them because you're right on the button on what you're thinking there, and I just want to reaffirm it, okay? He might have hung up. All good calls today. Thank you all very much. I want to thank Jim, Ed, Phil, and Saj, and Carol, and all good input. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us.
Well, there's a bridge and there's a river that I still must cross as I'm going on my journey. Though I might be lost, and there's a road I have to follow, a place I have to go. Well, no one told me.
I'd like to welcome you all. I'm Gary Nall. I've gotten a lot of calls about what to do about the coronavirus. And there's a lot we can do about the coronavirus. But one thing we should be aware of is every single day we're exposed to viruses and bacteria, to molds and danders, to all forms of airborne particulate matter, dust, and we're not paying attention. We're not paying attention to basic hygiene, and we're not paying attention, especially now when you got to understand when you're on an airplane today, you have no knowledge, no guarantee that someone on that plane may have the coronavirus and be coughing because it's asymptomatic. They can't even measure it until you get a temperature, and that's highly inaccurate. So I've invited Dr. Roy Spicer to come on today because I went ahead and I ordered in all that we could get, which is not many, and it's going to be a while because now everybody wants one of these. It's the Gary Nall Mini Ionic Air Filter, and it's small. In fact, I got two of them. I'm going to wear two when I go on my plane trip next. I'm going to put one on each side of my chest because I know what it does. And this is a brand new model, by the way. It's been upgraded tremendously because I don't want anything going into my eyes, nose, or mouth that could cause a problem. But we're adding something in different today. I was watching a documentary I produced about 9 years ago. It's called Ozone. Because if there's one thing that I know kills pathogens in the body like nothing else will, it's ozone. In fact, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, I read an article before we went on the air today about what she's doing with ozone. But I have a whole list of things that can help. But one of the things I do everywhere I go, and it's tiny. It's, you know, like 2 inches by an inch. And no one is black. No one even knows it's there. I wear a dark shirt. So I go when I do my lectures. If I'm on the subway, a cab, a movie, a concert, no matter what. Because I know from my background as a scientist how easy it is to pick up other people's microorganisms and then your own whole health could be challenged. Dr. Spicer has a PhD from Rutgers University in bacteriology, and he also has a background in water sciences. Roy, just explain briefly to the people from the latest actual clinical studies and laboratory studies at universities what the mini ionic air filter will do.
Yeah, hi, Gary. There's a number of studies that were done on aerosoled infectious particles and how to remove them from the breathing space. The summaries of several articles from journals like the Journal of Indoor Air and also the Journal of Aerosol Science and several other journals. These are researchers that from the University of Cincinnati, UCLA, Rutgers University, and other universities from New Jersey and other places. The infectious disease spread by either inhaling aerosol viruses or bacteria or touching surfaces contaminated with these infectious particles. When you have a device around your neck that emits bipolar ions and they agglomerate or charge these particles into larger ones, they gravitationally settle onto nearby surfaces, removing them from your breathing space. So when you have this device, the Mini Mate Ionic Generator, it will, when you wear it in a confined space for a period of time, a half hour to an hour, it significantly reduces the respirable aerosol particles in your breathing space. In other words, people who are coughing or sneezing or who are infectious and you have germs or any type of particles in the air and you're in a confined space and you wear this device, it'll significantly reduce 50 to 80% within a short period of time, half hour to an hour, wearing any aerosol particles by removing them or repelling them out of your breathing zone to nearby surfaces. So as long as you're not touching the surfaces, you're wearing the device, you're significantly reducing breathable particles. And that's one of the strategies to protect yourself from getting an infection, in addition to other strategies. So the recommended techniques that have been put out there by the CDC, aside from washing your hands, wearing a mask, and right now, from what I heard today, the Chinese are taking over a lot of the factories that are producing masks for the United States. So there's a shortage right now. I'm in contact with a lot of hospital systems. The CDC now, they just allocated, the government allocated $2 to $3 billion to get protective equipment because it's not available. There's not enough of it for the infection control people and the nurses and doctors that are going to be dealing with infectious diseases. So the public now is going to not get masks. So you need something, a protective device, and this Mini-Mate is the best way of reducing these particles from your breathing space. So I would strongly recommend having one while they're available. And this way you have at least another protective device to reduce your exposure and reduce your chances of getting an infection.
Good, thank you. I want people to realize there's a lot we can do. Most of it's common sense, but I'll give you some specifics. But I want you to get the video, the documentary, and so I'm including that in this package. Now, I'm limited in the number I have. So when we reach out, you know, right now we have only 100. That's all we can get. I don't know when I'll be able to get more. So I'll place an order and, you know, when you call in, if we're out of stock, they'll tell you. But in the order that you place your order, when we do get them back into stock, you'll be getting yours out. You're going to get the Gary Nall Mini Ionic Filtration System. You wear it around your neck. And do like I do. I don't care where I go. When I'm in a cab, how do I know the person that was just in that cab, since these viruses and bacteria can live days, and some bacteria can live months outside of the human, outside of the body, onto surface areas or in the air as well. So I just wear it everywhere. No one ever knows I have it, but I have it because I don't know what's in someone's throat. I don't know what they're going to cough at me. And so I'm taking no chances, especially when I saw how absolutely foolish the Japanese were by not immediately quarantining everybody in their cabin until they were all properly tested. They were socializing. They were going to the same food bars. They were in the same restaurants. They were the same nightclub on this cruise ship. And then the staff was infected. They didn't separate out the staff. Even infected staff were still going to work, or they were infecting other people in their rooms because they frequently didn't have masks. And then the night before they landed, they started dancing. That's a good thing to do when you're contaminated. Wow. And then they put a bunch of them on planes with people who were not contaminated, with just a simple plastic sheet separating. That is the dumbest thing I could have ever imagined. No, you keep them quarantined, because you don't know how each person's body is going to respond, and not everybody's going to show signs within the 2 weeks. It could be longer. In any case, so I do what I can. So I wear my Ionic Mini Filter everywhere because I want to make sure, as much lecturing as I do, as many tens of thousands of people I come into contact with at my lectures, answering questions for hours afterwards, I want to do what I can. So call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. You're going to get the Mini Ionic Filter, and you're going to also receive the award-winning documentary on ozone. A few more things. Vitamin C, an article in Orthomolecular News just last month, based upon 30 clinical trials, confirmed the antiviral activity of vitamin C. Vitamin D3, again, 10,000 units and up, are very powerful antiviral. Colloidal silver, the Journal of Nanotechnology, University of Texas, and Mexico University concluded silver nanoparticles kill HIV-1 within 3 hours, and viruses, virtually all, and other viruses. And then you have elderberry that you can take, 2 to 3 ounces of elderberry. Good study from Hebrew University Medical School on elderberry extract offers efficient treatment for influenza. Astragalus, olive leaf extract, and there are others that I'll go into in greater depth tomorrow. So the takeaway message is, if you're concerned as I am about what's in the air you're breathing, and I am, and you don't want to get infected with any bacteria or virus, then call. We only have 100. I'm sorry. For right now, call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. You really have to become proactive, because I'm looking at what's happening and thinking this is real soon going to get out of control, because it's been mishandled and mismanaged everywhere in the world. We're out of time, everyone. Have a nice day. Bye.